Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Wednesday stream.
Hello.
Hello.
Wednesday, my dudes.
It is Wednesday. It is Wednesday. It is Wednesday, my dudes. Welcome. Welcome to the show. I already see some returning members in the chat. Hello, Not Sure. Hello, John Morton. And hello, Chancellor Chief. And I know you've been a supporter before, so I will still say hello.
Hello.
It's good to see people as they filter in. I've got quite a compact one, hopefully, today. So we will
try to.
We will try and get through
we
it.
We will obviously start, as we always do, by, as you have sort of started to do, thanking the people that turn up for the streams.
Yes.
And watch them either live and interact in the chat, or let us know when they've watched them in the VOD, about how, whether or not they've enjoyed it in the comments, or letting us know about how good Al Gore's rhythm really is.
Yes, the rhythms of Al Gore. He has those island rhythms.
And for those select few who are even more generous, that like to sort of give us a little return favour for the work that we do, you can now support us on the Ko-fi thing that's been set up. Because
yes,
some people don't like the PayPals.
You can pay basically any method through coffee. So
yes,
that's become kind of our middle ground. We will try and give people shout outs.
There is still the usual super chats and super stickers.
And the memberships, yes.
There's memberships. And then there's also the Substack if you want to support us there. So there are loads of different options.
Yes, we've tried to make it kind of a, if you want to support the writing, or you can do it on the Substack, if you want to support the work here, you can do it directly via PayPal, or if you want to get some goodies via YouTube, there's always the Super Chats and all the stuff you mentioned there. Thank you to everyone who's donated already through the coffee. Thank you to Kieran, you decent donation there, thank you for the £32, that's quite generous. Donaldi, thank you for the £12, interesting work guys, thank you. And I think I said it last, but thank you, Third Program. I think you left your message anonymous, but thank you for the donation as well. I also got an anonymous donation via the PayPal. Thank you for the £25, knocking out the park, guys. Clearing out enemies I missed should always be a priority. Yes.
Yes, clear them out.
So someone's getting it there. So thank you, guys. You mentioned the Substack, and there is a lot more going on there.
Yes, both should have some of the... We did the stream the other week with the mantras for surviving modernity.
Yes.
Which a few people seemed to enjoy. I think it was a slightly different thing for what we normally do. And I had some people sort of, because I put a Twitter thread up, say, oh, is there like a different format for viewing this in that I can send to people? So I'm just going to write up, like, you know, 9 or 10 short form posts for each mantra, and then they should really just kind of drip feed over the next wee while, so keep an eye out for those as well.
Yeah, I've been trying to also keep up with doing a few uploads from pieces on the Substack. So I did last week the permissible activism article, and this week I did the sequel, which was Barking at the Headlines, which people seem to have really enjoyed.
Yes.
Mostly because of the, let's admit, that is the best thumbnail I've ever made, and the best band. It's a good shoot, guys.
I can tell it's really good because you never stop talking about
it. It's my finest. It's my magnum opus.
See, my only complaint.
His lighting matches. It's so good.
No, you have trimmed his beard in a way that gives him more of a jawline than I know he actually does have.
That's to make him fit over the Red Letter Media guy, and other people have actually commented on that too. Weirdly enough,
because he does not have that strong a jaw.
No, he does not. If anything, I'm flattering the man. I've also been messing with the short section. I just uploaded the stupid little New Britain. It's terribly cropped because that's how shorts work.
Oh, yes. I suppose on that subject, I'll say a quick thanks to A as well, who shared our New Britain, the original stream, New Labour's New Britain, on the Gordon Brown document. It was like 6 months ago. It was already that long ago.
Yes.
He did a little deepest lore stream on that today, and he set our sort of stream as homework for people to watch beforehand. So thank you for sharing that around, A, and the other people that did. But I suppose we should really get cracking, because we'd like to be done sort of around about in the space of an hour. We've got a lot to get.
Yeah, we have a lot, and I also enjoyed making this thumbnail too.
But I think this is a very good thumbnail. I do rate. I'm going to have some water. I'm trying out.
I'm not doing very well. Today we'll be covering Policy Exchange, which is probably the biggest if not the second biggest, kind of conservative, in quotes, think tank in Britain. They are the source of a lot of, especially the Cameronite, if that's a word, policy, yes, of the reform side, a.k.a. the leftward side of the Conservative Party. They are very much concerned with the social cohesion stuff and things like that. But as I said at the beginning of last stream, the whole point of all of these is that we want, as a minimum, the severing of the pipeline from our enemies into our own spheres as a basic principle. There are clear signs that the head-scratching regime rhetoric we see in supposedly distant spaces that's always deeply unpopular when we see it is pushed by outside actors working for those who created the current circumstances. The Home Office, the NATO Warhawks, and the Zionist Lobby were the big ones we talked about last time when we talked about the Henry Jackson Society stuff. But there is a heavy connection, we mentioned it during that stream, with a think tank called Policy Exchange, which, again, in fact, we'll just start here. We'll start at...
with Nicholas Bowles.
Nicholas Bowles.
Nick Bowles.
Yes. Nicholas Edward Bowles. Coleridge. Oh, he's got two middle names. Ooh, he must be doing very well for himself. He could afford two middle names. Most people can't even afford one. Bowles is the former director of Policy Exchange. He is a signatory of the Statement of Principles of the Henry Jackson Society Project for Democratic Geopolitics, a British neoconservative organisation, as we covered last week. And he's also the former flatmate of Michael Gove.
I bet you that flat was a fucking right state.
Which is, I found that really funny.
Bottles of like Budweiser everywhere and like crisp packets.
Two flatmates managed to become extremely senior figures in the Tory party. What a coincidence.
What are the odds?
How could that happen? but he's just a Conservative Party MP. He was the Minister of State for Skills.
He's the Minister of State for Skills, yeah.
So he's very, very much a Conservative Party insider,
yes,
which should not surprise us when we look at Policy Exchange. Again, we were using Powerbase for some of this, which is great for some links and trying to tie stuff together, but there's actually just a very, very good introduction here to Policy Exchange.
Do you mind if I read this? Because I think this is hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
Policy Exchange is a neoconservative orientated think tank with close ties to UK Prime Minister David Cameron. It was launched in April 2002 by two former ASDA executives.
Yeah.
Francis Maude and Archie Norman, with Nicholas Bowles as its founding director. It's part of the Stockholm Network, a working group of European market-orientated think tanks. 2011, Montgomery wrote, "The old right-wing think tanks weren't particularly helpful to the Tory modernisers, and so they built their own. Policy Exchange helped Michael Gove develop his school's agenda. The Centre for Social Justice gave Ian Duncan Smith his poverty-fighting plans. 2012, he described the two think tanks as having been the most influential centre-right think tank of the last decade." That's from Tim Montgomery, who might come up a little bit later.
I'll ruin the surprise later because he will come up later. But he is the co-founder of the Centre for Social Justice. And he also founded Unheard.
Who is Unheard for?
The Tory party and their one major donor.
Brexit backer.
But Policy Exchange is relevant because it was one of the outfits credited with the rebirth of the Conservative Party. I'd like to take you back into time.
Way back
into time. To the dog days, as we go to a lot, the dog days of the Brown government.
Yes.
Gordon Brown's just come in.
2009.
A man's following him around with a tuba and bagpipes. It's really confusing. No, not really. But again, Policy Exchange, despite being a charity, is an extension of the UK Conservative Party, and it is so proudly. We'll go over in torturous detail how much of an extension of the Conservative Party it is.
I mean, not to bury the lead straight away, but we can think about it in this period that by 2006, the out-of-power Conservative government was, or the out-of-power Conservatives, waiting really to be in government at any point soon.
Yes, they were about to be cycled in the same way that Keir Starmer's about to be cycled in.
But in that time, they sat there and they watched what Blair did. they saw that he used, again, as he pointed out in his little Substack piece earlier on, actually, he used all these different independent, outside, neutral, research-based bodies, you know, whatever name you want to give the multiple quangos. He set all these up, used them to draw up all his policy and his decisions, and then instead of having committee and this, that, and the next thing, they just forced them all through.
Yes.
David Cameron and his mates are basically sitting there thinking, well, we're going to be back in government at some point, so let's start making some think tanks now so that we're ready when we get in.
Well, the issue was that as I think it was Theresa May, that's why I've got her doing her silly walk in this image here, coined the term the Nasty Party.
Yes, we can no longer be considered as the nasty party, I think was almost word for word the phrase.
Yes, it is. It is very closely linked to David Cameron, as we'll come to, but it is really kind of, like I said, the premier Cameronite project. As Wikipedia says in a slightly different entry here, I know we're using Wikipedia, but it's a good tool to see how you're supposed to think about certain things, let's say.
Yes.
Policy Exchange is a British conservative think tank based in London. In 2007, it was described in the Daily Telegraph as the largest but also the most influential think tank on the right. The Washington Post said Policy Exchange reports often inform government policy in Britain, and Ian Dale described it as the preeminent think tank in Westminster Village. Policy Exchange is also a registered charity.
Which means it's non-political.
No, but.
An independent, non-partisan, educational charity whose mission is to develop and promote new policy ideas that will deliver better public services, a stronger society, and a more dynamic economy.
Well, that's the last we'll see of Wikipedia for now.
Yes.
But it's an interesting lead-in because Policy Exchange is very keen on bigging itself up, especially because it's such a young think tank. They are very keen on being self-aggrandizing. That's why all those quotes are at the front part of their Wikipedia page. I'll get rid of that. Sorry, I've got so many links open. But as we mentioned, as Tim Montgomery, they've already got some links to loads of other places. But really, in this era, Policy Exchange had its heyday in the Cameron years, but its roots are in those dog days, those wilderness years. Much like the Henry Jackson Society, it was blessed by Tory MPs, but this time even more explicitly. It's just the Conservative Party. It started life as part of Michael Portillo's campaign. It was
Yep.
helmed by a guy called Archie Norman,
Who's
who
one
was.
of the ex-ASDA
Yeah, he
executives?
was credited with turning ASDA around. And he's an arch technocrat who saw the Conservative Party more as a pragmatic business than as a political party.
Because you've got a little archive link for that one next.
I do, yes.
That one there,
I'm trying to
yes.
find it. Yes. Norman's still selling Portillo's dream.
Yeah,
I'll find it in here.
I just highlighted a part of this because I thought it was funny. There's a lot of discussion here back and forth between this Guardian journalist and this Archie Norman character and what happened in Portillo's campaign and why didn't it go well. And I'll go from the one just
It's not
above.
the Guardian. This was in the
Telegraph,
Telegraph.
sorry, it was. I get them so confused nowadays.
Yeah.
All the leadership candidates talk about the importance of tolerance during the early rounds of the campaign, but Mr. Norman thinks they missed the point. It's not about tolerance, it's about respect, he says. If we're a party of hierarchy, which values status, if we're self-important and talk in peculiar parliamentary language, if we use hostile language about people who come to this country in search of a new life, then people will see that and think we're not a party that respects them. So this is, there you go, there's Andrew Norman for you.
Yes, this is this is kind of the very, very early days of Policy Exchange. We get here. It was launched as they lost, but well, the Patel campaign had lost, but it represented the reform wing of the Conservative Party, of which David Cameron became the face.
Because as far as I can tell, as we will continue to go through
Well,
some of the other sources.
the whole thing is that if we quickly get up, sorry, that I shouldn't have closed the power base one
But
there.
because some of the previous bad results
Yeah.
from the Conservative Party were put on individuals who were essentially the antithesis of a sort of David Cameron. And it was you old fuddy-duddies that wish you were actually in the House of Lords. You're what's holding the Conservative Party back. We need to move forward and basically do a Blair.
Well, it just says here we wanted Policy Exchange to start to focus on four policy areas: public service reforms, decentralisation, internationalism, and the environment, as we'll get to see. The point was to develop a new centre-right thinking and solutions to the issues that most people cared about, but which the Conservative Party seemed to ignore. That is a euphemism for them essentially creating these issues whole cloth on the right and then pretending that's what the Conservative Party's been
I noticed they've got Damien Green signed the original letter for this. Does that mean all of his aliases signed it too?
Well, the whole thing is this whole thing started off as something called Conservative, where is that? Sorry, it's got a really Conservatives for Change.
Yes, yeah, so what you've got here, it launched using £75,000 loan from the explicitly political Conservatives for Change, which I presume is another charity.
Yeah, that was this. No, they're not. They're a business. So they did that. They were the explicitly political side. That's how the Conservative Party was able to launch it with their own money. Policy Exchange co-founder Francis Maud noted that we, Conservative Change, made ourselves redundant when after the 2005 election, I became party chairman, and 6 months later, David Cameron became party leader. All of this is to show you that this is explicitly a Conservative Party project.
Mm.
This is a project of the Conservative Party. It has never been anything else. It is very, very nakedly just an extension of the Conservatives.
And we can... before we go into the next little bit you've got there, there's a little bit more I think we could add context-wise, which is we can almost sort of attribute what we're about to go on to here as solely the work of this cabal of people within the Conservative Party through avenues like Policy Exchange.
Yes.
The Tories' wilderness years were listless, you know, think 2001 to 2008, and often consisted of waiting for them to be inevitably cycled back into power. This opportunity came with a disastrous Brown government and the collapse of Labour as it ran out of steam after more than a decade in power. The biggest issue in Britain in the 2009 election was the financial crisis, followed closely by immigration, which was the most emotive issue. And we went back and looked at some polling stuff on a stream a few weeks ago back in 2012.
Yes.
It was as early as that you had the entire populace, or was it 70 or 80% essentially said, no, we don't want them here. We want them to go back.
Yes.
Which is the most emotive issue. It was clear that Labour was going to lose regardless, preordained almost. So why did the Conservatives continue to lurch leftward into sort of nowhere middle ground and open the door to both the late BNP and then what became UKIP? I can only presume that it is the influence of a sort of clique of people who belong to Policy Exchange are partially the reason for that.
Yes, it was. Well, we'll get on to here quickly some more of Policy Exchange's founder. I know you have some bits from this that you'd like to read, but let's take us into what I'm considering kind of part two here, which is the idea of the Conservative Party via Policy Exchange once they get into power and as they are preparing for power of doing the right thing.
It's X year. We must, as Conservatives, understand X, Y, or Z progressive issue. The thing I thought interesting, actually, from the Guardian article you've got up here, is just this first paragraph. It's from some writer, Tim Adams. He said, when was the moment when a change of government seemed inevitable? Was it a year ago when George Osborne made his speech about inheritance tax and Gordon Brown packed away his election plans? Was it when Blair decided to finally give up on New Labour last May? Jesse Norman, the Conservative Party candidate for Hereford, who, if I'm right in saying, is also associated with Policy Exchange at its start, would take it back further to 29th June 2005 when David Cameron uttered these not quite memorable lines. We recognise that government doesn't have all the answers, and we instinctively assume the best in people. We trust people. We don't view society from above, like some national project to be managed, directed and monitored. We look at society from the bottom up, individuals, families, communities, voluntary organisations and faith groups, businesses, all the complex wonder of a modern, diverse country. We do think there's such a thing as society, we just don't think it's the same thing as the state. Now I'm instantly getting, you know, Bill Clinton, the age of big government is over vibes.
Yes.
But also in a much more insidious manner. We can see that he's doing exactly what Blair did.
Yeah.
But with a slightly different conservative tinge to it. By saying, look, we're going to appeal to the people, the grassroots. We're going to go from the bottom up. And what they're actually going to do is going to stick all these mates in policy exchange and have them push out all the policy they want anyway without, ever engaging in any sort of grassroots organization that makes it, I don't know, decentralized, whatever phrase you would want to use. I mean, this is clearly the antithesis of the way that that Tory government, which is still in power today, has ruled.
Yes.
Managerial is almost it to a T.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to go out. The paragraph that stuck out to me was this one. Cameron's choice of venue at the launch speech was as symbolic in retrospect as what he was saying. He was talking at the think tank Policy Exchange, of which Norman was the executive director. Cameron and his team were keen students of the mythology of the rise of New Labour, and they believed that no party rebranding would be complete without an ideas engine to nurture policy and personnel. Blair had the Institute for Public Policy Research and Demos. Cameron would have Policy Exchange, established 3 years earlier for that purpose by moderniser in chief Francis Maude, who we'll come across.
Give us the next paragraph as well. I
Yeah.
think there's some good context there we can give to people as well. In the 3 years since Cameron's speech, as his star has risen, so has that of Policy Exchange. Despite the embarrassment of Newsnight's expose of its questionable research into radical Islam, again, much like the Henry Jackson Society, almost at the exact same time, they're selling it to you as a heel.
Yes.
And the recent report suggesting northern cities were doomed. Its staff has increased from 5 to 35. Its budget, mostly donations from the city, has grown nearly tenfold. One of its founders, Nick Bowles, has become head of policy for David Cameron. Its former chief researcher, James O'Shaughnessy, is now chief researcher at Tory
James
Central Office.
O'Shaughnessy.
Current director, Anthony Brown, has just been appointed head of policy for Boris Johnson in London.
Yep, well, that should give you an
It's
idea.
a very small circle of people, or sorry, circle these people all swimming, isn't
It's
it?
amazing that they're able to found this independent charity that never gets investigated, and suddenly they're all in power. I also just wanted to point out that this is nominally positive coverage from The Observer, which at the time really
Was
was
it on The
just
Guardian?
a palette swap for The Guardian.
Oh, the, sorry,
It's part of the Guardian group.
the Observer Conservatives,
The
fair enough.
Observer was fully absorbed into The Guardian quite a number of years ago because the British newspaper landscape became so dire. But that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing a conservative politician being lauded, or at least given the benefit of the doubt by The Guardian group.
Yeah, and then you've got
So,
more from this one
well,
you want to read as well.
there's. I think this sums it up best, which is from Conservative Home. This is by a guy called Ian Dale. I believe he was part of Policy Exchange. Because he talks about it in the bit here. I will quickly get this up on screen because I also have it in our little research document here. Good Lord, this is a badly formatted page. But yeah, this should really sum up where Policy Exchange comes from. Policy Exchange has always been seen as David Cameron's favourite think tank, not least because it was set up by Nick Bowles and Michael Gove, who was its original basically chairman. Again, a sitting Conservative MP. I was one of its trustees in the initial few years. I was the token David Davis supporter on its board. Remember David Davis? It has survived the transition from Cameron to May and now to Boris Johnson. In fact, I'd say that it's now the preeminent think tank in the Westminster Village. There's that bit from the Wikipedia article. It has also become much more attractive to people on the left, who often turn up to its events and write papers for it. An event last week with Dominic Raab and Mike Pompeo. I spotted Labour MP Khalid Mahmood in the audience. He also co-wrote a paper last year with Tom Tugendhat. These sound like made-up people.
Tug on hat sounds a bit wrong.
Yeah, it does. On restoring the law of treason. Trevor Phillips has also written for it and is playing a leading role in the think tank. There are a few organizations that could attract power players, from Mark Carney to Alan Greenspan of the.
Or Dominic Raab and Mike Pompeo to appear in its platforms. Can we go for the other two below that as
Yeah,
well?
sure.
Dean Godson, who's been the director of Policy Exchange since 2013, has skillfully led it through three different conservative administrations in a way that other think tanks can only marvel at. The softly spoken Godson is often thought of an ideological right winger. Yet his pragmatism has enabled Policy Exchange to reach new heights of influence, with dozens of its alumni now sitting in the conservative benches in Parliament.
Bum bum bum. Well, there's a quick thing from here. This is from the Byline Times, very lefty, but they talk about government by think tank and the return of policy exchanges.
What's that picture of that very small Indian man doing there?
With Rishi Sunak. Well, it turns out that Rishi Sunak was a member of policy exchange.
Yeah, third paragraph there. Yeah. You've got dramatic rise and fall of Liz Truss. Her successor has not heeded the warning. Truss' brief ascendancy was shared by a suite of libertarian think tanks based in Westminster's Tufton Street, which inspired her policies and were quickly discredited by her fall. But rather than ending this approach to government, Rishi Sunak has presided over the resurgence of Policy Exchange, the largest right-leaning think tank for which he himself once worked.
Yeah, Rishi Sunak worked at Policy Exchange in 2014 to 2015, a role unusually light on policy. We'll see this later on, that there seems to be certain people who work for Policy Exchange but don't produce anything.
The BME Research, that's the British Minority Ethnic Research Unit, which he headed, produced one substantive piece of work, a useful but largely descriptive report on Britain's ethnic minority communities with little in the ways of recommendations.
Yep.
The BME unit did not seem to have long outlasted Sunak's election as MP for Richmond and Yorkshire in 2015, although the following year, Policy Exchange would return to ethnic relations issues in the more combative guise of David Goodhart's Integration Hub.
Yes. But I just thought it was interesting that Rishi Sunak is basically
down here again, more of the names I've got. While Sunak's time with Policy Exchange was brief, the donations to his leadership campaign suggest a more substantive relationship. Several supporters were also Policy Exchange funders, either individually or through family foundations. Eleanor Shawcross, who gave £20,000, is married to Policy Exchange trustee Lord Simon Wilson.
That's a different Shawcross, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entirely sure, though.
Are we sure? Because Shawcross was a central figure in Sunak's campaign team, as now his policy chief in Downing Street, former advisor to Jos Ardsburn. Her family connections came under scrutiny in 2021 when her father, William Shawcross, became Commissioner for Public Appointments.
It's not a different Shawcross. Oh, no.
Of course it wasn't going to be.
Extremely incestuous. Oh, dear me.
That almost constitutes a glow watch.
That does almost constitute a glow watch.
But at the other end as well, you've got commentary from people like George Bloody Moinbot, who's attempting to tell you that Policy Exchange is going to upend democracy. And there's we could go through this because there's a couple of places where he actually makes a somewhat interesting point, which is roughly why bother dealing with all the nonsense of putting your policy to the public, having them feedback on it, and have this sort of reciprocal process. Why not instead just throw loads of money at it, have it fart out all the policy you want, and then essentially use it like a big PR operation?
Yes, basically. Well, there's a lot of kind of internal wrangling that goes on over people like Policy Exchange. In that it's a lot of fighting over who gets to play with the political ball.
Yes.
And this is very much kind of a get influence out of politics, drum beating piece high by fucking Moinbot. That doesn't really say a huge amount. Is there any of this you want to pick out? Or
There's nothing special in this I wanted to go over.
I just wanted to go over this by its virtue of framing, in that there's a lot of talk about shifting power away from state institutions, when really Policy Exchange is a state institution.
Yes, but this is the point, though, he's making here, is that you are going around a lot of the committee and parliamentary processes and making something like Policy Exchange have almost an executive function.
Yes.
Because it's operating on almost the same level.
Well, it's very much them, we'll get to them later, but it's very much them kind of wrangling about think tanks versus quangos. Because Labour and the left are very keen on doing this within government itself.
Yeah. That's why if you tried to read through this and pull the argument out of it, it would take ages, because there's loads of just waffle in here where you try and pretend that Labour hasn't done the same thing. But the general point, there is at least something to it, which is that these think tanks aren't just made up for nothing.
No.
There is clearly either a reorientation or a reframing of power that is useful to the elites, both currently and prospective, and having these think tanks beside them.
Well, I also just wanted to point out that all of the criticism of Policy Exchange comes from the left. there is no mainstream criticism of Policy Exchange that comes from the right. It's the same with the Henry Jackson Society. And I believe that is deliberate,
yes.
That they are framed always in these hyper-partisan terms, which means everybody stays in their lane. There's a whole thing here. We'll see them peppered throughout, but the Rishi Sunak connection is deeper because, surprise, surprise, Policy Exchange drafted some of the recent policing bills we talked about.
Yes.
Policy Exchange had to add oil-funded think tank.
I think it was one of the only things possibly mentioned in the Wikipedia was both a number of both policing bills.
Yes.
Possibly some of the Digital Economy Act stuff as well, I think.
Yes.
Which is essentially a precursor to the Online Safety Bill. And I bet you if you dug deep enough into the Online Safety Bill, you would find half the people that have written or engaged with on commit, you've probably also come from Policy Exchange.
I want to use this to highlight, this is a single example, but there are lots of examples of Policy Exchange bringing forward stuff that we've talked about. They will have been involved in the Online Safety Bill. They will have been involved in most of the policing bills. They will have been involved in, as we'll come to later, a lot of environmental policy. They are involved in the writing of some of these parliamentary bills, which means that in no small way, they are responsible for the last 13 years
of technocratic
Tory policy. They are, as has been put forward here, as by their own admission, the engine of modernity.
The idea engine. Is that what they do, thought showers? And...
Yes.
But no, you've got this point here from Open Democracy, which is an interesting one, which is them trying to do like a limited hangout about how Policy Exchange is bad because it took Exxon Mobil money or whatever. But we are sitting here thinking, well, wouldn't an organization like Open Democracy want to critique them for putting in draconian policing bills?
No, it's framed from the climate angle.
Yes.
It's targeting just the oil.
Also, the odds as well that this is only about a week old article. Yeah. Right when we're doing this stuff.
This has been known for quite a long time, but Rishi Sunak has admitted a right-wing think tank that received funding from US oil giant ExxonMobil helped the government write its draconian anti... You can see the jacketing here.
Mm.
The jacketing here is, this is not meant for the right. You will not use this source on the right. This is specifically about people who get upset, they shout to their bowl of muesli about the government going after climate protests.
As lobbyists.
Yeah. But really what it is it's part of the Conservative Party's own machinery writing security policy laws that will have to have been consulted on by the likes of MI5 by necessity. And if they're...
We studied as well, we already have the Shawcross link.
Yes.
Both to MI5, to the Home Office, and to Henry Jackson. We also now know that Shawcross's own daughter gives large sums of money to Policy Exchange candidates.
Yes. Well, here's more of a security state connection, in that they have the extremism and terrorism, the need for a whole society response. This was a Policy Exchange event from the 26th of February 2018, which was hosted by the Colin Crompton Memorial Lecture by Mark Rowley. Well, who is Mark Rowley? He is an assistant commissioner for the Metropolitan Police for Specialist Operations and national lead for counter-terrorism policing. He is one of these elite police who only police for the Home Office that we've talked about.
He would have been in communication with
the Special Demonstration Squad. Very definitely. But you picked out a couple of bits of this. There's a lot of it, but...
Yeah, got giving the Colin Cramphorn Memorial Lecture, Extremism and Terrorism, the Need for a Whole Society Response, A.C. Rowley reflects on his time overseeing counter-terrorism operations in the UK, which saw not only 5 terrorist attacks, but an unprecedented number of both Islamist and extreme right-wing plots, which... as it's now framed in all MI5 stuff, it's extreme right-wing terrorism.
Yes.
Arguing that extremists use sophisticated propaganda and subversive strategies to create and exploit vulnerabilities that can lead to acts of violence and terrorism, Rowley calls out so-called representative Muslim bodies, such as CAGE and MEND, for fostering grievances and isolation and denounces Britain's first fear-mongering tactics.
By the way, CAGE and MEND were two of the people we used last time because they are some of the only people documenting the security services' relation to these think tanks. It's very odd that they would call out CAGE and MEND.
There's going to be some vintage names coming back up in a second as well. Rowley calls for a whole society response, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
David Cameron... The message
the big society,
is, every, you know, it's the big society, but it's different from the state. but the whole society has to respond to the demands of the state. So where's the separation? To address the combined challenges of terrorism and extremism, urges the police and MI5, the private sector, those involved in social policy, integration and education, the family courts and social services, mainstream and social media and communities to play a role. Now, to me, that sounds like he's asking for the CHIS bill, the covert human intelligence sources.
Yes,
he wants every single aspect of society to be able to act like a specially commissioned intelligence officer at any given moment.
Well, what he's calling for is a subsummation of the big society into MI5.
Yes.
Really. Or into whatever special operations he does in conjunction with the security services. Mark Rowley's a good example because he's as close as a policeman can get to an MI5 officer.
Yeah. I'm sure if we were to read through the full transcript, there's probably some more interesting stuff, but we, I'm afraid, do not have the time. So
we very much do not have the time. If people want to get an idea of what Policy Exchange did and what its policies led to, I just have this from Time magazine, which is called How David Cameron Saved the Conservative Party by Alan Duncan, who I believe is a Conservative MP. He's a former Minister of State for the UK Department for International Development. So he is just a Tory MP, right? I don't know why they let him write this in Time magazine, because it's so simpering. But it's this really is what Policy Exchange and the Cameronites think of themselves. They think of themselves in these terms. I'll start it from his legacy, because they mentioned Brexit. His legacy will prove to be the resuscitation of the Conservative Party as an electoral force.
The bastard.
Yeah. His election as party leader signified an acceptance of three successive election defeats the Conservatives needed to change. He had to share the public's affection for the National Health Service and genuinely commit to policies that had been the preserve of the centre-left, such as overseas aid and equality for gay people.
Yeah, not to fully...
More than that, he had to recruit more women and ethnic minorities as candidates to look and sound more like the country we wanted to govern. All those things were done under Cameron's leadership.
But just the point on gay rights there is an interesting one. As we mentioned it before, it's such a critical sort of turning point, because Cameron basically turns round to the Tory base and says, fuck you, we're doing gay marriage.
Yeah.
And a third of them say, well, if that's the case, then we're out. And that's how it goes. And a third of them leave. So what you end up left with is two-thirds of the Tory base that is willing to accept gay marriage as a policy. And then they give these people more voting powers within the party.
Yes, they do.
To sort of fully cement and solidify that change.
As Prime Minister, Cameron knew when to cede ground in the face of unpopular policies, but also when to stand on issues of principle. This was never more evident than his decision to press on with the introduction of same-sex marriage, despite considerable opposition from many of his own MPs and activists. His steadfast commitment to equality was utterly vindicated and proved to mainstream voters that the Conservatives were serious about equal rights. That is the fruit, the flavour of what Policy Exchange achieved during the Cameron years. But we have a lot more to cover. The self-aggrandising by Policy Exchange seems to be in service of the fact that it routinely sells access. People know that if you donate to Policy Exchange, as we'll get to in its finances, you get access. You get access to ministers. You get access to the policy engine. Caught on camera, top lobbyists boasting about they influence the PM. Special undercover executives from Bell Porter, Villa Dark Arts, as they use to burnish reputations of countries accused of human rights violations. Basically, Policy Exchange got caught trying to sell access to MPs. That explains some of the language that they use and how honest and open and brazen they are about being part of the Westminster machine. It gets them eyeballs, it gets them money, and it gets them kudos. So that's why they do it. They're very, very brazen about it. Here's a quick speech. I think we quoted part of this before. This is 10 Years of Modernization from Francis Maud. He basically just talks about the fact that the Conservative Party, you know, Conservative sea change policy, overall political group promoting the modernization of the Conservative Party. I was its chairman, and I hope the sea change would not be needed for long. He basically just, this is a big mission accomplished banner about what was just talked about there, about how they have completely transformed the Tory Party into a centre-left party, effectively. And that is how the founder of Policy Exchange talks about it as a kind of societal force. Again, this is Tim Montgomery talking about how Policy Exchange being its second decade with focus on the striving classes. This is where one of the other quotes is from about Policy Exchange's increasing modernization and its increasing popularization within the Conservative Party. But again, these are all extremely self-congratulatory articles from the Conservative Inside, think tanks, Conservative Home, talking about how they have managed to, by being, one and the same, reform the Conservative Party leftward
It's
via,
progressive and pragmatic,
yeah,
and it's the
Policy
right thing to
Exchange.
do.
Yeah, and how that is what made them win the election, not the fact that, as what has happened with the Conservatives now, that New Labour detonated.
And people just get sick of the same people
Yeah,
running the country for a
people
decade.
do not vote on policy.
No.
They do not. They vote against the other party. They do not vote for you. And if they're voting for you, you're generally being pushed by the media itself, which means that you are a candidate being cycled in. That's generally how it works. But
The Quang goes.
the Quan goes. This is from the Evening Standard. I'm not going to read too much about it, but I want to contrast the approach of the Labour Party here with the approach of the Conservative Party. Where is this? Sorry. This must all be seen in the context of the Blair years. Think tanks provided an alternative to the quangos, in quotes, the quasi-governmental, basically NGOs that are government-funded, that were used to launder policy as neutral in the Blair years. As the Conservative Party was in opposition, think tanks proved the best way to amplify their party machinery, especially when it comes to lurching leftward. So really in 2006, the big debate was about these quangos, but the alternate approach, especially from the Conservative Party at the time, was to have these replaced by semi-private bodies that would not use up their resources. The way that the Labour Party was able to produce so much policy without burning through its relatively meagre donations, and the same the Conservative Party, now that it has effectively collapsed as an organisation with membership, is they used government money to do their own policy research via quangos, or they found think tanks and go fishing for donors, as we will
As
see. It's a great way for the Parliamentary Conservative Party to conserve and amplify its resources via the use of a charitable third party.
it then possible to suggest that unheard,
Yes.
post-millennial, post-liberal, the sort of complex that's being organized around GB News, is this them making sort of damage limitation measures so that they stick around? As well, obviously we know Starmer's coming in next. They
Yeah.
know the same thing too. Is this their new attempt at some sort of policy exchange thing as well? Let's just be the whole complex of the think tank to the media channel.
Yes, these are exactly the same people. A think tank that was, if you remember Ian Duncan Smith, we talked about him, that was in very much the same vein as Policy Exchange, in that it was a left wing, or at least left wing for the Conservative Party think tank that came up with policy, was the Centre for Social Justice, which was founded by Ian Duncan Smith. And Tim Montgomery, again, the guy who founded Unheard. And all of these projects have very much the same bent to them. The Centre for Social Justice star has fallen as politicians like Ian Duncan Smith fade into memory, but Policy Exchange is still going strong. Both Policy Exchange and CSJ attracted Blairite politicians from Labour, with much of the old guard like David Blunkett attending meetings of both of these organisations. And yes, the connection is there because you get all of these policy wonks, all of these people like Tim Montgomery. He's still most famous for the Centre for Social Justice. But he was the founder of Unheard. And we can see these new media projects. We saw the Henry Jackson Society and Unheard last time. These are the same people. These are your elites. These are the people who are behind the curtain. There isn't that many of them, and they are everywhere. We will be seeing the same names come up over and over and over again, who all have incredibly close links to the government. Tim Montgomery was creating policy for the Conservative Party via a think tank that was as part of its machinery as Policy Exchange was. And yet Unheard still gets quoted by people as a supposedly distant outlet, even though it was founded by him and it was financed by a single person. And we'll get into that at some other time, because we're getting a bit long in the tooth here. Well, let's have a look at what Policy Exchange actually does. Because Policy Exchange is producing a lot of noise that we would consider adversarial. Yes. from a traditionalist point of view. He is Neil O'Brien, the director of Policy Exchange.
Do you want me to just read 2008 to 2013.
Yes. Let me have a quick make sure this is displaying properly on the
I would scroll up a bit further though.
Oh, that's fine.
Vera. My career in politics nearly ended the day it began, when I was almost run over by a gang of Nazis in a mini metro. Not a very butch car to be hit by, I know, and a rather pathetic substitute for a panzer tank. But it was the early 1990s, and supporters of fascist government. Fascist government in Britain had seen their resources dwindle a bit over the decades. I was 14 and attending my first political demonstration.
Who is dragged to political demonstrations at 14?
In the 1990s.
What pod person are you? Anyway, continue.
Yeah, against an anti-Nazi league protest against the BNP in Halifax. I became separated from the crowd. There were some hooligans from the other side screeching around in a car yelling abuse and doing handbrake turns. Based. As I ran down a street away from them, they drove the car up onto the pavement behind me. I thought I was about to be mown down, but the last minute they swerved back onto the road and roared past. Bugger, they missed. Several pasty-looking middle fingers were extended in my general direction.
So he's basically a twat who wanted to
give us the next one here as well.
Yeah.
It was an interesting introduction to the strange politics you can get in some small northern towns. You get weird politics when people don't know where to turn, and I think that's what's going on up north at the moment. David Cameron inherited lots of political baggage from the 1980s, which makes it tough for the Tories to win a hearing.
It's not very good for me.
Fair enough, they've got George Galloway and all sorts of other pish in there. So
it's just the introduction that I thought was.
Is it just him basically being like, oh, we need to take up the space that UKIP would otherwise take up?
Well, it's also very clear that Policy Exchange was very pro-gay marriage. In fact, it actually warned explicitly Conservative MPs, be like, look, you vote against this, you'll be basically papped out. We will make sure that you are never on the front benches ever again. This is from February 2013. Conservative MPs should think twice before voting against equal marriage. Equal marriage has provoked anguished internal discussion in the Tory party. 20 association chairmen have asked for the Prime Minister to backtrack on his proposals, and up to 180 MPs are rumoured to be considering voting against the proposals today.
Wait, scroll down for a second.
Yeah.
Equal marriage is about extending the benefits of marriage to a group presently excluded because of something over which they have no choice. Well, fuck them.
It isn't about redefining the institution. Actually, it is, and it did.
Yes.
Considering the MPs should think twice before voting against equal marriage, there is strong support for the measure in the country.
Says who?
And internal evidence suggests there are dire warnings of opponents are misplaced.
He's trying to push back against the slippery slope there.
Yeah.
If only he bloody knew, but I suppose he probably did.
Well, it is. Policy Exchange is at this point explicitly woke, in quotes, as well.
It's got the last line there. Yeah. Supporting equal marriage would be firmly in line with the best elements of the conservative tradition. This article was originally published in The Spectator.
Yeah. Well, again, this is him a year earlier. The gay rights debate should avoid political point scoring. It's neutral, it's good, and we're doing it. But this is the stuff that Policy Exchange has always produced. We get further onto it here with somebody who we may recognize from last time, because I think she was mentioned, but
Hannah
Stewart,
this is for the Henry Jackson Society.
Yes, Henry Stewart writing in the Huffington Post here about once again the security state. Hannah Stewart is now basically the security and policing policy person for the Henry Jackson Society.
Yes,
we'll keep looking and keep finding this revolving door between other think tanks that keep producing this policy. But the contest strategy signals a zero tolerance approach to extremism. And again, I'm in the wrong window.
He's searching in the wrong window again.
But again, we have here the mentioning in one sentence of far-right extremism and all forms of extremism. Crucially, the new strategy reaffirms the government's commitment to preventative approach to tackling terrorism, despite concerted campaigns against prevent from Islamist sympathising voices and others. We would be the others. Today's announcement by the UK's first Home Secretary of Muslim background, Sajid Javid, Mr. So What himself.
Get back into the taxi.
Yeah. Signals a zero-tolerance approach towards all forms of extremism, including the far right. An approach that prioritises identifying and deterring extremism before they strike, as well as challenging the extremist narratives that could act as drivers of terrorism. This is what led to the MI5 report we talked about, which classed civic nationalism as the greatest threat to British security.
Cultural nationalism.
Yeah, cultural nationalism, which is basically civic nationalism, as the greatest threat to British culture. So greatest threat to Britain in terms of right-wing extremism, in quotes. But they're talking about the contest strategy. It's prevent and contest.
We're going to have to keep moving because I've noticed how much we've still got left here, and it's already 10-2.
There's a lot. I said it would have to be a longer one today. There is quite a lot to cover. But here's the real meat of what Policy Exchange do. Here's one of their reports from 2022.
Guy on Twitter, Eric Kaufman, you're supposed to like?
Yeah, he helped write this. And it's egregious. It's very egregious. Tell you what, we'll just read it. Well, first of all, Brendan Cox, who is the widower of a certain Joe Cox.
Yes.
So we know where this is going. It's called Whatever Happened to Integration. But there's so much stuff. The preface here is quite amazing.
The UK is an increasingly diverse country. Most of the public value that diversity. Do they fuck? But much more is coming, but much more is coming. How Blair is that?
Yes.
There will be more brown people. And there are concerns that as this trend continues, majority anxiety might grow until it wanes into minority anxiety, as it has in the US in alarming ways. If we are to continue to build a tolerant country that feels comfortable in its diversity, we need to take integration more seriously. It is critical to building a multi-ethnic democracy in which the majority feels that most minority citizens are embracing, at least to some degree, the common norms of society, and minority communities have access to the full range of social and economic opportunities. Yet integration, as Brendan Cox describes, has been a political orphan with no one to promote its interests. You bastards, civilization is incommunicable. No amount of social reform can map Western society onto brown people.
Well, this is what the leading right-wing think tank in Britain produces. It gets even more brazen. 2022 is a good year in which to think about it more constructively as we emerge from COVID-19. We'll get to that later. Integration remains one of the slipperiest concepts of the political lexicon. The issue bubbles to the surface when homegrown Islamist terrorism strike or when immigration hits the headlines, for example, during a refugee crisis. The government's tokenistic approach... Oh, where is this? Sorry. Here we go. Moreover, in recent years, the question of what there is for outsiders to integrate into has become more uncomfortably relevant as the majority itself has become increasingly diverse and many of the old ties of social connection have frayed. There is, as Brendan Cox argues, an integration issue for everyone, not just for ethnic minority communities with recent arrivals. It's the becoming a minority framework. Yeah, he's talking about two-way integration.
I just see Time Stealer giving us a wee £2 there. Can I have custard on me black pills, please, miss? No, you can't. You can eat them bloody well dry.
We'll wheel out the black pill dinner lady thing at some point. But but there's two more bits in this that I'd like to talk about, which are as, if not more, egregious. Where is it here? Sorry. The second big reason we don't talk about integration is that it is difficult to know what decent, fair-minded people from wherever, whatever background should feel about it. How much commonality is needed for a society to function well? Basically complete. How much stress should we place on the white majority mixing more with minorities? Or vice versa. It's just the grab a lead with that. How much importance should we attach to ethnic minority integration compared to, say, integration across class or age or region? How much should poly So they're basically talking about integration as homogenization,
Yes.
not as integration. How much should politics lean against the so-called homophily, so-called the tendency of people to gravitate towards people like themselves? There are no clear answers to these questions, but liberal democracies like ours place a high value on individual freedom and choice, which makes it difficult to tell people where to live or where to send their children to school for the good of a more cohesive society, ethnically and otherwise. We are not Singapore, where this is the. Such a bizarre paragraph going, well, we'd like to just hold a gun to people's head, but we can't really say we're going to do that. God, there's another.
Can we go for the paragraph right at the bottom of the page there for a second? Brendan Cox, the widow of Joe Cox, the MP murdered by a white identity extremist who has a particular interest in social cohesion issues, observes in chapter one that, unlike most other political issues, there is no consistent lobby for integration, and neither of the main political parties has a strong incentive to pursue the issue. I mean, that's him recognizing that neither main party wants to get out and fully put on a platform for we're destroying the British nation state. But
Yes.
they should, because his wife got murdered, and you're a bad person if you disagree with him.
Here we go. Just from slightly later in the introduction, it says, oh God, this whole thing is just so awful. But this again stood out to me as the most egregious. Again, this is a policy exchange report from supposedly the premier right-wing think tank. We could see, on the one hand, big urban centres where the ethnic groups and lifestyles are highly diverse, the politics broadly on the left, and the attachment to the existing national traditions weak. While on the other hand, most towns and the countryside remain overwhelmingly white and with much stronger attachment to traditional values and national traditions. How can we join together to deal with problems that may require shared sacrifices like climate change? With such a cleavage running through the land. They're not basically saying, they're saying it's a bad thing that these places are different. What they're saying is that you need to smash the countryside with the cities to tackle climate change. That's the subtext there. There are two reasons for optimism and also for believing this is a good moment to be returning to this challenging issue. The first is the pandemic and the reserves of solidarity it has uncovered
It's a weird thing for conservatives to be talking about, isn't it?
From small scale neighborliness to massive state action to preserve jobs. Again, reasons for optimism is massive state action to preserve jobs. Conservatism. And as Brendan Cox argues, despite all the conflict and pain, surveys show that most people felt the country did come together when it mattered. The second reason is of ethnic minority integration and segregation are increasingly part of a broader problem of generating social cohesion. That's a weird way to format that. In an individualistic society, there are fewer points of connection from what we believe to what we watch on TV, and a weakening of institutions that bring us together. Where's the other part of it here? Oh, here we go. There's a bit, I believe, in the conclusion that I is also just incredibly egregious. There it is.
Do you want me to read
It's a bit further.
this bit?
Yes.
Post-Brexit changes to immigration policy and the subsequent decline in hostility to immigration point towards the ability to progress in even the most contentious of policy issues. I mean, that perfectly talks about the framework we mentioned in
Yes.
the performative failure stream, where the government has essentially, for 15 years almost, constantly put their hand up and said, well, we can't do anything about immigration. We'll try and stop it getting any worse. And then it gets worse, and they say, well, we can't do anything about this. And what they're
Yes.
saying there is that this has happened so much now that people have just become apathetic and given up.
And the schemes responding to refugees from Syria, Hong Kong, Afghanistan, and now Ukraine promise better integration outcomes. So they basically just said, we've done it, guys. We've ground people down so they don't care as much about, despite promising to limit it. And that's a good thing. People care less about immigration, even though our headline policy during the Cameron years was reducing immigration. And here's where that's a good thing. So we can glean from this that policy exchange is incredibly pro-immigration to the point of being further along than the Blair government was in 2001, where they declared that there were no ethnically British people. This sidesteps that debate and goes straight to the idea that the normal native British population needs to integrate with the immigrant population in a two-way direction, which is the becoming a minority framework stuff. But
to form a common homogenous culture.
Well, where does Policy Exchange's funding come from? They are notoriously
take a bloody good guess by the fact that the guy who wrote this one's called Jonathan DuPont.
Well, we'll see. Policy Exchange, like the Henry Jackson Society, has a notoriously opaque finances. But from what we can glean, they have taken money from, let's say, some large globalist organizations. Again, this is a full-on Policy Exchange report. This was published. Acknowledgements. We'd like to thank the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for their generous support of this research project. In addition, we would like to thank everyone who took part. Who took the time to give their thoughts and feedback. In particular, we'd like to thank development engineers with the help of data analyst Hannah Stewart, and her help in the section on extremism. That's this, I believe that's the same.
Henry Jackson Society's Hannah Stewart.
Yes, but here we are. Here's someone who went on to join the Henry Jackson Society, who was part of Policy Exchange, working directly with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who, by the way, funded this. They gave $215,000, which is about 10 times as much as ExxonMobil.
I reckon
gave
if
them.
We went back through that report and read it in full, I bet there'd be stuff in there about climate change.
Yes.
About vaccines.
About right-wing extremism.
About probably big data and some false pretenses towards, oh, we're going to have to preserve privacy. Ooh.
So
essentially all the things that are now key issues nowadays.
So the leading conservative think tank in Britain that is proposing policy to government is given nearly $250,000 in 2016 by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who then scrubs it from their website.
Of course they do.
This, by the way, is only accessible by the Wayback Machine. It is no longer on the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation page. But yes, it is just Policy Exchange taking money from the Globos.
And whilst at the same time they've done that, they're also writing up, how are we going to make net zero achievable? They're going to take the plans for net zero seriously. And I think you pointed out elsewhere that one of the organisations this was supported by...
This is their...
The European Climate Foundation.
This is them. Again, they took funding from the European Climate Foundation.
The author would like to thank many companies and stakeholders who provided input and views to their support, including all these different bloody people that I'm sure if we were to go and spend the time looking them up are probably all horrendous. Especially Zoudutu Gebrehonas.
Well, again, this is Policy Exchange acting in lockstep with the net zero initiatives. They are acting in lockstep with the European Climate Council, with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation on net zero. They're doing the conservative pitch for net zero. But why does all of this matter? Well, they also like to include people in their reports who are the board members of Hope Not Hate. This is Ruth Smith. This is Ruth Smith, who has been a board member of Hope Not Hate Limited since May 2015. Here she is being lauded as anti-Corbyn, anti-censorship.
By the Jewish Chronicle, of course.
By the Jewish Chronicle. I don't plan this, it's just the Jewish Chronicle. But where else is she? She wrote the introduction for Policy Exchange's Academic Freedom in the UK. A relatively recent report that has a policy area that someone else was involved in. But we'll get to that later. But again, just Hope Not Hate publishing documents in the UK government's pet think tank, who is also supposedly
playing up pretenses to the notion of academic freedom.
Well, I hope that we have by now shown you the type of organisation that Policy Exchange is. If you know your onions at all politically, you would go nowhere near this organisation that is in the pocket of the European Council on Climate Change, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, works with people from Hope Not Hate, and is simply an extension of the government, and has done apologetics for every leftward move they have made, including what was considered, you know, the Beyond the Pale incidents, which was gay marriage. Well,
Unfettered immigration.
Unfettered immigration. Well,
the complete defanging of our police even further than Tony Blair did. It's never ending, the complaints. We have covered them for so bloody long. But it's okay, because they've sent us a saviour.
Welcome to chapter 3.
The False Prophet.
I believe this might be the part some people are ending up skipping to in the VOD. Because we've gone through all of that, really.
So that we can make fun of this man briefly.
So we can get you... No, not really, but so we can show you. These people are not far away. They walk
amongst us. Look to your left.
Look to your right.
Look to your right. One of these people is policy exchange. The other one is Henry Jackson.
we laugh, but... Tell you what, let's have a quick look at where's the Battle of Ideas one that I linked here, because that's a good example. I think
you've got it linked, but I don't think you've got the link open, I'm afraid.
Okay.
We're doing live searching on stream.
There we go. Calvin Robinson, he's always introduced as a senior fellow.
He used to always be introduced as...
As a senior fellow at Pelosi Exchange. But we don't know when he started working there. We don't know when he stopped working there. We don't know what he did there, but it is the main thing that legitimizes him. Apparently he's been working with the Department of Education, which was through Policy Exchange, because they are one and the same thing. So how does
You'll notice as well, he's not wearing a certain item of clothing. I don't know if we've got this constantly stuck on screen here at the moment or not.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes, but we'll notice in this image of this man here, a distinct item of clothing is missing. He is not mentioned on here as some faith preacher or anything, is he?
No, he's not.
As we're about to go through with some of the older sources, he was really brought to us 3-4 years ago on things like the New Culture Forum and all these sort of things as
a senior
ex school teacher.
Yeah.
Semi tech bro, failed tech entrepreneur, who's also the uber sensible mixed race man.
Oh, dear. It's again though, senior fellow at Policy Exchange, but we don't quite. It's a role, let's say, that was light on policy, like Rishi Sunak's.
Yes.
Because if you look at the Policy Exchange page, if you search the term Calvin Robinson, as we have done here, nothing matches the criteria. And if you go directly to his page on Policy Exchange, author Calvin Robinson...
It's still there.
It's still there. He hasn't actually authored anything. Calvin Robinson was a senior fellow responsible for education at Policy Exchange. We don't know when this relationship ended. We don't know what he did for Policy Exchange, and we don't know how long he worked there, but his mission for Policy Exchange seemed to have been to turn himself into a media figure.
Yes, it seems that he only has Policy Exchange cachet. He has done no legwork for them. I also like the slight blurring of his afro in that image there, just to get him onto the white background. He's kind of got a bit of a going on.
Well, what would attract the anti-gay marriage, anti-immigration, anti-climate change, basically the based preacher man to an organization like Policy Exchange, which is just an extension of the Conservative government and is the wettest of the wet on every single issue he claims to be against? Why was he a senior fellow at an organization that has done nothing but push policy he purports to hate? And he would know this because...
Unless he's never been in the bloody building.
Yeah.
I mean, as well, when we think about the fact that he seems to have been elevated for no other purpose than to essentially be a post-racial, multicultural stopgap who goes out and says ridiculous things, like trying to create a legacy for Enoch Powell as a civic nationalist and suggests that the English identity does not inherently exist to those that are explicitly white.
Here's his political CV. The co-founder of the Conservative Friends of the Caribbean. The Conservative candidate for Kilburn in 2016. The Conservative candidate for Swiss Cottage, Camden, 2018. And then he becomes a Brexit Party candidate. Well, but then he goes back...
You're missing such a vital one down here, though, all the way at the bottom.
I'll talk about that.
He's a member of the...
Yeah, member of the Conservative Friends of Israel. Member of the Conservative Friends of Israel. And as we will always recommit our undying love to the nation of Israel. But he then goes on to be a campaign managing agent for what? For Conservatives after being part of a Brexit Party thing. And then goes on to be part
of Fox's The Reclaim Party. But to fund the BBC and all these other stupid bloody
But right at
things.
The top there is, this is from March 2022, he is still a senior fellow at Policy Exchange and a subject matter expert for the Department of Education through that role.
Sorry, can we go down for a second as well? Yeah. Content creator on Disney's Yogcast YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Because I forget about the fact that he used to be...
Oh,
his
yeah.
first thing in media was being like a part of like the gamer, right?
Oh, yeah. No. He was on Bros with Froes.
But again, we've gone all the way from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to fucking Yogg's Cast.
But again, we've got he's involved with Turning Point UK, which is another think tank that is headed by a conservative politician. It's also one we made fun of previously
for countless reasons, to be honest.
Yes, for many reasons. But chief among them being this one, which is the where's the Calvin Chudson image? Why is that not working? There we go. Okay, I'll get that back up on stream because I've got to load it this time. But yeah, it's this Turning Point UK image is the one we always make fun of. But this explains why we keep seeing all of this out of these pre-made media figures who come to us. This is why we keep seeing this out of all of these figures. This is why we saw it with the Henry Jackson Society to put in de-escalation, de-radicalization rhetoric into the Mallard. This is where Calvin Robinson comes from. He is the conservative. He is a tendril of the Conservative Party via Policy Exchange. Yes. He was lended legitimacy by his role at Policy Exchange. And he only slipped under the radar because people are so ignorant of what Policy Exchange is.
I mean, before we go through some of the last examples, I think we should just read that bit you've got there.
Yeah.
The fact that people fall for this is frankly embarrassing and shows how easily influenced and infiltrated this space is by the same old magic soil that bunk that even the Tory boys outwardly scoff at. The lack of scepticism when someone appears fully formed in a media blitz is troubling, and the labelling of calling out the obvious plants in our midst as drama is a death knell to any level of independence or ability to gatekeep outside influence that will destroy any notion of a truly dissident space.
Yes.
And people just eat up this shite. The loony left have lost their marbles. They're the real racists. They're the real bigots. They're the real transphobes. They're the real whatever is required to say to, for one reason or another, appeal to the left and somehow bring right-wingers in, however that's supposed to work.
Well, I just thought it was very funny. It's some very ironic tweets here. Calvin Robinson, to hope not hate. Who funds you? It's funny that he's talking to hope not hate. Well, you have a crossover with his former employer.
See, it's really easy to find out who funds Hope Not Hate. We did it for the most part, looking through their charity commission stuff, because they actually have to report that.
Policy Exchange doesn't. Yeah.
Neither does the Henry Jackson Society. We can only glean details out of essentially leftist trials to try and sue them.
I just found it funny him saying, how the Conservative, though, was it, talking to David Cameron, after working for Policy Exchange, which pioneered the policy of conservative gay marriage.
Yeah, and it's not like he joined them not knowing about it, surely.
Why would you suckle from the teat that contains the poison that you claim to be? I don't understand why anyone who is of a quote-unquote based bent would even consider not only being a candidate for the Conservative Party, but working with Policy Exchange, the Cameronite engine of liberalisation.
Yes. I mean, you're not going to subvert it, let's put it that way.
No. It's...
And then the latter part as well, which I don't know if you want to get the last two links up, is he's very obviously being framed to us now as... Oh, sorry, I'm not going to up.
Yeah.
But in the last, like, 18 months, he's gone from being black, he's like the black nerd,
yes,
to the black preacher. He's the preacher man now.
Yes. But that has appeared kind of whole cloth out of nowhere. Again, there should not be a pipeline from the likes of Policy Exchange into dissident spaces. There should not be somebody who is being lauded as a Le-based man who at the time worked for this organization we have just outlined, the pet project of the left Conservative Party, who are the faction that has ruined Britain.
Yep.
It is just the establishment. It is just the same cancer. It is all from the same place. And we cannot keep allowing these people to inject themselves into our midst, because it always leads to the same place. We cannot, you know, change these people because they have more resources than us. They are more numerous than us. All we can do is try and keep them out of our midst and have an actual independent space. And right now, we don't have that. And we don't have that because of think tanks like Policy Exchange and their agents like Calvin Robinson.
Well, it's not that we don't have that because these people exist. We don't have that because people are not willing to engage in the legwork or do the hard graft to go out there and gain influence and power for their own sake. Because you aren't going to subvert these people. You aren't going to pull them on board. Because we're going to continue to cover as we go through more and more of these people and the frameworks and the things that they have said and done over the last decade or more. They already wrote this out as a bloody strategy. We will go on to another person that appeared in a certain Swindon show, Matt Goodwin, in a couple either at some point next week in one of our shows. Now, he wrote a whole big thing in 2011 talking about how our government will respond to populist extremist parties. And as part of that, he said, well, you just adopt the policies of the extremists. You do it in a rhetorical fashion. And then when it actually comes to the punch, you don't do anything about it. And that's exactly what we're seeing day in, day out from this massive containment operation that is centrally organised between the Home Office, the Centre for Policy Exchange, the Henry Jackson Society, and the offices of GB News.
Well, again, I just would like to reiterate that if people had spent the last 5 years making investigations into, say, how the Conservative Party has created leftward movement in the UK, they'd know about Policy Change. But instead, we've had SJW-owned compilations.
Yes.
And anyone who knows their onions should have seen senior fellow at Policy Exchange as that man's leading hook for influence, and they should have run a mile. But they didn't, because people are lazy, and they will not do the legwork, and they will not look at all the egregious examples we've given you of what Policy Exchange is. And we can only guess how people get vetted, both for Conservative Party kind of MP standing and also for senior positions at places like Policy Exchange.
I bet you it's a bloody lot more strict than the vetting that goes on to become part of any dissident organisation, I'll tell you that.
Well, thank you guys again for watching. We've gone a little bit long today. I believe this stream is probably being suppressed because it's got the word globalists in the title, I've just realised. YouTube doesn't like that
globalists.
Word. The globalists. So do give this a like if you can. Do share it, because we have been a little bit suppressed. I've had a few people message me being like, oh shit, I didn't realise you guys were live. So yeah, that's just how the cookie crumbles, but I'm not going to edit my title for the algorithm, because, you know, we like to summon the algorithm, but we don't like the algorithm very much. And we don't bow to it. We do not bow to the algorithm. It bows to us.
Yeah. So. I mean, I see someone in chat asking about, did you know this? Did you guys know about this stuff 5 years ago?
I did.
I mean, well, you knew about parts of it, but at no point back then had it become obvious that this was all just going to march across in a big media operation.
No.
And that it was going to be anywhere near as brazen as it has been. I am actually very surprised at how little effort they have applied to cover their tracks in these regards. And mark my words here, it's almost like they're setting themselves up to get caught.
I just think, depressingly, that we don't have enough people who are able to call this stuff out.
No.
Thank you for the hello.
Hello.
Mr. H. Hello. 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 I think the person just said hello. Very good. But again, we're not going to get too long in the tooth. Again, thank you guys for watching. Thank you for the people that did show up. Apologies to people who are watching this in the VOD who didn't get to see it live because we're using no word. We'll do it again, I'm sure. But again, additional shilling.
Keep an eye on the Substack. Support us on the Ko-fi thing. Support us anywhere else you feel free. There'll be a new piece out on Thursday, the first of the series of mantras. I would appreciate folks sharing them around because there seemed to be a lot of reception for that. And otherwise, have a good weekend.
Yes.
Get yourself down to the pub and we'll see you on Monday.
We'll see you on Monday. Have a good evening and goodbye.